Okay, welcome to the Hot Hot Boots Podcast. I'm your host, Ernest Christian. We are in the middle of off-season. Free agency is just about over for the most part. The Miami Heat already have their 15-plus man roster all set up. And now we are toward the end of Summer League. And I guess if you're an NBA fan, obviously this is a podcast. This is where the most depressing time of of the season really hits, because now there's nothing going on. Now we'll have the Olympics this year, of course, in August, and but beyond that, really, there's no more basketball activities until we get back to camp in September, and certainly preseason in October. But and I'm sure we'll try to find more shows to do, and throughout the summer and into the fall before the season opens. But in the meantime, we still have news coming for the Heat in these last coming days. But today we're going to pay attention and strictly discuss Pat Riley's press conference that he had over the weekend. He had his first press conference. It ran about almost an hour long, actually. And he addressed everything. He addressed everything from the Dwayne Wade situation and him leaving to Chicago and his failure of bringing in a big whale, a.k.a. Kevin Durant, during this free agency period. He addresses all those topics. He addresses in this, and what we're gonna do here, I'm gonna go ahead and we're gonna go through some of the key pieces of his press conference over the weekend, and I'll give my opinion in it. We have some sound clips here of Pat discussing some of the things that was on his mind. Save the Heat address when we're gonna call that. We're gonna do all that. We're gonna go through line by line a little bit of each thing he said, each key point he said during his press conference, and we'll, I'll give an opinion and all that, and see what you like. First off, as always, visit the site at hothoothoops.com. We are part of SB Nation's Miami Heat coverage. We thank you guys, of course, downloading this podcast, streaming. Of course, find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio. We're going to be on Google Play very soon. And we'll get started now. First things first, Pat Riley opened up his statement with discussing the failures the failures of the free agency period and not being able to lock in Kevin Durant, which is his number one. Actually, to be honest, his number two priority, because he did retain Hassan Whiteside day one free agency. But of course, obviously the number one prize of this free agency period was Kevin Durant. And he did address that. He addressed it during his press conference. So here it is, him talking about his failure to not lock in Kevin Durant.
Obviously, from my standpoint, and from the team standpoint, we've had a tough summer. Period. In this league, you don't have an opportunity at times for do-overs. And when you get a chance to win, as we have had in the past, 2006, 11, and 12, when you get a chance to win, you got to win. And when you get an opportunity this summer to do something that you could have done and you didn't do it, you didn't do it. And so 1995 or 96, I was put in charge of basketball operations. And I've always taken the approach that there were about five things that I really valued. And they're not my words. They're somebody else's words, because we all get educated by other people. But is to, be impeccable with your word, to never take anything personal. Don't make any assumptions. Always do your best. Be skeptical, but learn to listen. And this summer, at least three of those things didn't come to fruition. So,
still shocking to Ian with the, knowing that Miami had a small ball chance of hell to even getting Kevin Durant services, that, was it a risk for Riley to take the meeting with Durant? The answer is no, because Durant was ultimately the biggest prize, out there. And if you're one of six teams that Kevin Durant himself said, yes, I want to talk to you about my future. Of course you're taking a meeting. So regardless of whether it may have risked losing Dwayne Wade or even Hassan Whiteside, you know, at one point, you know, before Miami tried to lock him in. You take the meeting with the best player, you know, in the market at that time, especially when he's actually making you one of the only six teams to even meet with him. Like, yeah, teams like the Lakers and teams like the Wizards, who were rumored to have wanted him for 3 years, and we're going to try to get him to come home. And yet, Miami's one of the six teams that had a chance to actually nab him. The fact that Durant considered you an option was great. So that's why I think ultimately, even though I had some reservations originally about why would Riley go this far, knowing that the best options are OKC or even Golden State. The fact is, you get a meeting, you take the meeting. So that's it. It's that simple. And whether alienated Dwayne Wade or not, that's up for discussion. But you got Dwayne Wade, Pat Riley once again addresses the Dwayne Wade issue. And of course, and by the way, if you guys have heard the press conference before already, or if you've seen some of the clips that's out there on the internet, of course, you know, with, you know, him, you know, there's actually video out there talking to his press conference. I've been following Pat Riley for about 30 years. I've never seen Pat Riley as melancholy and as almost sad in a lot of ways, as he was most of this entire presser, and especially with the Dwayne Wade comments and stuff. Like he's definitely still shaking a week later about his departure. Shock and awe is definitely the term to use here. And of course, he addressed the idea, you know, he had a plan for his future and how he wanted to retire and whatnot. And obviously now, at least for the time being, that will not come to fruition right now. But Pat Riley did take responsibility for how it was handled. I think we can all agree that whether we agree with the direction Riley's going in post-Wade or Wade going to Chicago, whether it's because of respect or whatever, we can agree also too that, and you know, the way it was handled in the media in the last week or so before Wade decided to go to Chi-Town, that it could be handled a little bit differently. And Pat Riley did take full responsibility for that fact.
What happened with Dwayne floored me. And I'm going to miss the fact of what I might have had planned for him and his future and how I saw the end and my thought process and how I could see his end here with the Heat. You are what you think, and you are your thoughts, and it's my responsibility to sort of make that happen. I didn't make it happen, and Dwayne left, and so the buck really stops here. I'm not trying to fall on the sword for anybody. I have great regret that I didn't put myself in the middle of it and immerse myself totally in the middle of it. Get in a canoe and paddle to the Mediterranean if I had to, you know. Be in New York when he arrived on the 6th and greet him at the airport. I didn't do that. I wasn't there in the middle of that negotiation, and that's my job.
It's safe to say that the Pat Riley Dwayne Wade relationship deteriorated not even before this summer, because as you know, Pat Riley saying and admitting that he was not there to close the deal, or at least greet him at the airport in New York, to, you know, try to close the deal, try to at least figure out a way for Dwayne to stay. But as you remember too, Mickey Arison was not only there this year, being the last line of defense for the Heat to try to keep him there or try to negotiate something with Dwayne to stick around. But Mickey Arison also last year as well, when Dwayne signed a 1-year $20 million deal last summer, it was Mickey Arison, not Pat Riley, not Dwayne's agent, Henry Thomas, who were in the room. Mickey Arison went to Dwayne's home and worked out that deal. So the Pat Riley-Dwayne Wade dynamic has probably been on the rocks for longer than we realize. And I think now with how things have gone, you can, you know, whether it was LeBron James and, you know, him on vacation with the Banana Boat Boys in Spain and the influence, whatever it may be, I do think ultimately there's responsibility on both sides, on Dwayne's end and Pat Riley and the Heat's end, And ultimately, this relationship was coming to a conclusion. So that is what it is. That being said, Pat Riley, like he is, regardless of how he feels, you know, and melancholy as he sounded, he did stress the urge to move on and forge on with the Miami Heat. Here's his comments on that.
It's not going to be the same without him. But we will, you know, forge ahead. I've been here when Zoe left, been here when Shaq left, been here when LJ left. You know, Brian Grant, Eddie Jones, but Dwayne is unique. And as I think Mike and our marketing department, you know, have done such a great job, you know, there'll always be a mat under, I mean, a key under the mat. I just hope it doesn't get too rusty. That's all.
I gotta be honest with you, the marketing, when Wade left, like literally within 24 hours, there was no room for any bad blood to happen because immediately, once Dwayne announced his decision, you saw social media immediately with thank you, Wade. You saw the Miami Heat and their social media directives, whatever it may be, putting out thank you, Wade's greatest moments. And, you know, and of course, Friday, the Friday after, the day after, 2 days after, whatever, they do the $13 sale on all Miami Heat, on Dwayne Wade jerseys to solidify acknowledge 13 years of Dwayne Wade's service to Miami Heat. So even in the face, even in the area of probably bad blood or discontent, there was still love there and it was still the respect. And I think the Heat knew that PR wise, this is not a very popular direction that they were going in for the strong, you know, basketball fan like myself, the guys who probably, or girls who probably watch basketball tooth and nail, and understand the game and the logistics and knowing, you know, when it's time to let go, whatever, they might understand, of course. But for the mainstream fan who probably watches the Heat game once every 2 weeks or just a casual NBA fan, a casual Heat fan, it was a rough day. So the Heat made sure they curbed that and made sure they acknowledge Wade's service to the team. And I love how Pat Riley, you know, the whole key under the mat thing, that was their, you know, replying to the, you know, the ad they took out to the Miami Herald, whatever it was, for, you know, even Kevin Matt, which means, you know, who knows? I've been saying already that I do see a scenario that I can see Wade retiring here. Now, you can't sign one-day deals like you do in the NFL, but I could see a scenario where Dwayne might play one final year here, do a little farewell tour. I could see that. A lot of people say no. I'm optimistic about that. I love to see that, to be honest. It'd be great. he's got like a nice little punctual point, exclamation point at the end of his career. We'll see. I don't know. I've seen Dwayne his last 10 days in Chicago. Not too excited about it. It doesn't seem excited. And even when he's like smiling about it, I just don't see the enthusiasm. Like, clearly he wanted to stay in Miami. Clearly. That was very obvious. And Pat Riley also, like, the man he is, you know, he's always been. You know, he's obviously old school. It's time to move on, regardless of situation. And he's doing that. That being said, now, with the Wade thing behind him, with the Dwayne Wade saga behind him now, the biggest issue now moving forward is Chris Bosh. As you know, he had his second bout with blood clots this past season, and as you know, he wanted to come back to play during the postseason, which the team never cleared him. And it was asked, I believe, by Aaron Winderman of the Sun Sentinel. It was asked whether Chris Bosh, what is his prognosis and whatnot. Where does Chris Bosh stand right now in terms of his future Miami Heat and whatnot? And that's what Pat Riley had to say about that.
It's always fluid, and it has been since there was a diagnosis and a decision for him not to play for the rest of the season. You know, what the standard of care is in that situation is what drove us to make that decision. It's a positive environment right now with Chris, and I think his doctors, our doctors are constantly or more so now than ever, communicating. I know what Chris wants, and I know he wants to play. And And obviously, we would be open to that. And but there's still this is still a very fluid situation. There's no on this day today. You said it's today the 15th or the 16th. Already? Okay, it's the 16th. There's not an answer, Ira. I wish I could give you one. And so let's just let this process, you know, move on down the road, and then we'll go from there.
Even I get a lot of questions about Chris Bosh. Okay, what's going on with Chris Bosh? What's his future at? What's his future like? Is he going to play next year or whatever? And to be honest with you, it's the same, like Pat said, it's a fluid situation right now, and until doctors are comfortable with clearing him, he's not going to play. It's just that simple. And every doctor, I believe, that's tested him has not felt comfortable clearing Chris Bosh, as far as we know. That's what we're hearing. And Pat acknowledges also, too, that it's a fluid situation now. Until there is absolute clarity on his health comes first. You know, now, Pat Riley has said that there is a positive environment of communication between the doctors and Chris's camp and the Heat right now. And of course, Bosh wants to play, and he did say he wanted to play during the Toronto series. So, you know, in the playoffs, and you know, and the Heat said no, obviously, and that's that. I said the Heat are open to him to play, but like I said, it's still fluid. There's really no answer on his future. But here's the thing, though. I feel like right now this is the calm before the storm. This is gonna get ugly. I really believe this is gonna get really ugly, because at some point, Chris, I believe, is going to push and push and push. And there is something to gain for the Heat here, too, if Bosh is in play. If Bosh was to retire on medical, like on medical leave, medical retirement, and that somehow happens before February, I believe mid-February. I don't have the dates in front of me, but it's somewhere around February. If Chris Bosh is to medically leave and retire, and by the way, Chris Bosh has 3 more years on his contract at $74 million, I believe, somewhere in that ballpark. If Chris were to retire, the $24 million salary he has on the books the season after next, will be clear off the cap. Now, Chris will make every single dollar, no matter what. So money isn't necessarily the situation for Chris Bosh in terms of recouping his entire remaining salary. He'll get that through the insurance money or something like that. But the real thing here for Miami is that Pat Riley in this playoff with the Dwayne Wade situation also do. That he also values cap room, and Chris Bosh's cap, if Chris Bosh were to retire, or the Heat were to trade him, which that doesn't happen, but let's say Chris Bosh were to retire, because that seemed to be the one, probably the most realistic thing to happen in this situation if it goes that far. Miami now becomes a very, very flexible team cap-wise next summer, and as you know, next summer's class of free agents that are expected to hit the market, you know, obviously LeBron is the one-on-one, but I don't, you know, we're not going to count that. If Kevin Durant, obviously not next year, it was a Golden State deal, which I doubt he'll leave, but, you know, you never know. Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, Blake Griffin, a lot of big names. Chris Paul, you know, a lot of big names out there, a very deep class of free agents. And I know, you know, Pat Riley likes whales. Whales are, of course, big names. And so this is something really big to him, and the Chris Bosh situation would definitely give him a lot of clarity. And I think personally that if you took a lie detector right now, I think Riley and company would rather him retire in an effort to have that cap room. And I don't blame him, because right now Chris Bosh is right now, with his health being as risky as it is right now, I don't know. I just think that I believe he should retire, just because of the fact that I think there's no risk. I mean, there's no reward really at this point. Now, he's a 2-time champion. He has 5 kids. He has a very diverse lifestyle. You know, he's not a guy that I don't think needs basketball either. Needs it like Kobe does or Jordan did. You know, I think he would do just fine. He's a Hall of Famer in my opinion. So I think that he doesn't need basketball. So retiring for Chris Bosh would be something I believe he would, I think, I personally would be something he should address. But that's just me. Okay, next, Pat Riley discusses whether he regrets not being more involved in the New York trip that Mickey went on, the New York trip, but ultimately the last meeting before Dwayne decided to go to Chicago. And pretty much gives the fans and people in media a bird's eye view of how it is and how did he operate in terms of negotiating contracts and whatnot and recruiting players. He gives a little bit of an insight of how that works within the Heat organization.
We've always operated on the premise of a single voice, you know, not mine, you know, but Mickey, myself, Nick, you know, Andy, you know, Eric Woolworth, you know, Mike McCullough. I mean, one single voice. I mean, there's two entities here. You know, when it comes to basketball operations, we've always talked about the one voice, which is a philosophy and a plan, and moving on down the line that we all that's what we are and that's what we believe in. And so there was one voice in this negotiation. There are some times that Andy, you know, handles an agent and a player, and Andy complete the deal. You know, there are times that I've done most of them, you know, and complete the deal. There are times when you have a long-standing relationship with a player, you know, like Dwayne or Udonis, you know, or even at the time I remember with Alonzo, that sometimes the owner gets involved in it. But we all speak with one voice. We all know what we want to do and what we want to accomplish. And so, I mean, the thing that happens during the course of negotiations, you know, over the course of 7 or 8 days, has to do a lot with your thought process as to what the conditions were prior to that.
Next, Pat Riley breaks down what his goals were the last 2 years of negotiating and basically, you know, trying to help Dwayne Wade achieve more greatness and getting help. He addresses the mindset of what his goals were ultimately for Dwayne Wade to get more help, a.k.a. this year being Kevin Durant, in a post-LeBron James world. Here's his comments on what his goals were the last 2 years post-LeBron James after he left in 2014.
And the conditions prior to that over the last year or two have always sort of pointed in the direction that, you know, we as an organization didn't do enough, you know, for Dwayne. And I've always been one who was reaching to get him another guy, especially, you know, after LJ left. And trying to find a way to get him another guy to help him not only win, but to help him win in a way that he would be very proud when he moved on out and retired.
Definitely a fascinating spin on what Pat Riley did there in trying to explain his mindset was to get Dwayne help ultimately, even after LeBron left. And, you know, like I said, you know, Pat Riley always wants big whales and whatnot. By the way, it's also fascinating, too, that Pat never refers to LeBron as LeBron. He refers to him as LJ. and it's just, I don't know. I find it, maybe it's not a big deal at all, LJ, whatever, but I just find it fascinating. He won't refer to him as LeBron. But you refer to everybody else as I'm not trying to be picky or you guys. I'm just saying that these little tidbits here you just notice. but yeah, I mean that's his mindset. He wanted to get Dwayne help, but aka Kevin Durant. But like I said, I think the relationship between Dwayne and Pat was so far gone. Like I said, when Mickey is the one saving, you know, doing the last two meetings, the last 2 years. But since last year, and of course, this year in New York, that to tell you, I actually with a sign that, you know, yeah, Pat and Dwayne aren't on the same page and haven't been on the same page for quite a while. Next, Pat Riley discusses his relationship with Dwayne Wade and where it is today and whether they are on speaking terms or whatnot.
I haven't spoken to Dwayne yet. I've been crafting a very long email to him, and I'm going to send it when it's finished. But it's not finished. As far as I'm concerned, if I saw him right now, I really believe that it'd be a warm embrace. You know, I don't have any of those feelings, you know, any negative feelings for him at all. You know, I know that he was caught in a quandary with his thinking and his thought processes at the time and what he felt was going on. And I know I was locked into mine, you know, at that time. And so that's what happened. But I think, and I was so impressed you know, when he talked to you guys the day after, and I really believe he was sincere, truly sincere in the things that he said. At that particular time, you know, he was raw. And I feel the same way about him. You know, we all do. And I think everybody in the organization will feel that way about him forever.
Next, Pat Riley addresses the future of the Miami Heat and his goals going forward and admits that the youth movement is on in Miami, and furthermore that the Heat will definitely be playing under a new pace next season under Goran Dragic and the young talent around the Miami Heat squad today.
Priority at that time, not being the priority, not the priority, I said a priority, was Hassan Whiteside. And there's no doubt that I was going to meet and talk with him early and get him signed. The fact that Hassan and Justice and Josh and Tyler are all like in that young group of guys. If you want to, we can debate it. Give me four guys their age in the league, and let's play a four-on-four game, and I think we'd have a pretty competitive four, whether they're lottery picks or not, you know. And so we feel that we have a good base of young players. And so now the next step is to see what they can do and to augment this team and then go from here. We are definitely going to be young. We're going to be playing at probably a different pace next year. What player emerges as sort of the guy, you know, only time will tell. And I think that's a great part about, you know, being in my position, is that once you give somebody the responsibility and you say, okay, hey.
If you know Pat Riley's history with building teams and continuing to restart and whatnot, his restarts aren't necessarily restarts with the youth movement. You know, he's not really necessarily big on bringing a whole bunch of young guys and trying to build for the next 3 to 4 years. That's not Pat Riley's mantra. It's never have been. It's always been about bringing whales, big free agents and whatnot, and bringing big names, building around that, and, you know, veterans, whatnot. But so to see, you know, see Pat Riley, at least right now, at least through his press conference, embracing a new direction. And the fact that you let Dwayne Wade go, knowing that keeping him to his demands was going to hurt Miami's flexibility cap-wise next year in the future, of course, and then, you know, having to restrict the youth movement here. And I think it's good to know that Riley is finally starting to not to be as stubborn as he used to be back in the day, because he's not, like, the proof is there. Pat Riley's never been big on European players and never been on big on bringing, you know, in the draft and young guys. He's always been the guy that goes after the big fish. And it's good to see at least right now that he's embracing this next step, even at the age of 71. Also, being in a post-Wade era now, I've been saying this for a while, that the biggest beneficiary for Dwayne Wade not being here, and you're going to see it next year, most likely, is Goran Dragic, because now he'll be able to play that high tempo pace. You know, he's always wanted to play. That was not the case this past season in a lot of stretches, because Dwayne and Chris love to have the half-court thing going and whatnot. But Pat Riley agrees. Pat Riley says that Goran Dragic now, with Dwayne gone and whatnot, and the youth movement here, that he will benefit now moving forward. And not just Goran Dragic, but also Justice Winslow. And Pat Riley seems very, very excited about the possibilities of Justice Winslow moving forward now, maybe being a starter of three now that Lou Alding is gone. Pat Riley seems very excited about what Justice Winslow can bring to the table moving forward.
I think Goran is going to have a different kind of season, a different kind of responsibility. We'll see what happens with him from that standpoint. Justice, Winslow, you know, we've always sort of looked at him, and it's time. I remember when James Worthy, you know, came to the Lakers, and Jamal Wilkes was the incumbent. And then there came that time. There came that time when it was just a matter of time before James Worthy, you know, was going to take his position. So are we ready for Justice Winslow to start at the three? I am. I'm not just throwing him out there. This guy has been thrown out there last year and played significant minutes and significant times. I trust him. And so you guys put too much emphasis on the things that he can't do versus what he can. And those things that he can't do, he's going to be able to do better with more minutes.
Some of the negative rhetoric that came out after Wade left, especially from the post, the pro Wade supporters, not trying to fight you guys, of course, but some of the pro Wade supporters after he decided to go to Chicago, was that a lot of people were upset that Riley would not give Dwayne, you know, 2 years and $50 million, whatever he wanted, or even a third year, but he would commit to Tyler Johnson at 4 years at $50 million and in a contract that actually has a poison pill, which, you know, basically is like very low numbers the first 2 years. I think it's like 1.9 first year, and then $5 million the second year, and then it balloons to $18 million in year three, and I think 19 year four. So don't quote me on those numbers, but that's the graph it shows. That's the way it goes. It's a poison pill contract. It's heavy on the back 2 years of the deal. And Pat Riley discussed that and explained what the difference was between Wade's, you know, 2 year deal and Tyler Johnson, and why Riley ultimately decided to keep Johnson, regardless of the poison pill deal.
Well, if you're rolling over year to year and you're looking at the free agent class, then, you know, having your best and most important player at a time in his career, you know, he's 35 years old, having him on a one-and-one, on a two-year deal, on a one-and-one, you know, so if he does opt out, then obviously the next year, if there's people out there in the market that you want that could come in under, and then you have that flexibility versus being locked into a three-year deal where you don't. You know, he could opt out, and if you miss on somebody, then because he's got bird rights, you know, bird rights is the golden pass here for any veteran players. So you don't have to give players, you know, 20, 20, 20, 20. You can give them 20, 8, 37, 25. What difference does it make? I mean, it's just, you know, and we never talked about that, but I'm sure that that's probably, if there was a player that Dwayne really likes it, heck yes, you know, if there's a free agent that can come in here.
And apparently Mickey Aarons is a big fan of Tyler Johnson. And he's the guy that called for Riley to match the offer that Brooklyn put out there at 4 years, $50 million. It was Mickey Harrison that was the one who made the call to match Tyler Johnson's offer. He's a big fan of Tyler Johnson.
And the reason why we matched is because, you know, when you have a restricted free agent, or he wasn't a restricted free agent, but he was a player that under the Gilbert Arena rules makes it very difficult for you. Makes it easy for somebody like Brooklyn, who tried to get a bunch of young guys, balloon them up. And so to tell us that, you know, we're going to poach one of your guys, you know, Mickey said, you're not poaching any of my guys. And, you know, Mickey made the decision. He loves Tyler. He's a young piece. Part of our future, and so we'll deal with years three and four, but years one and two, we got them at a bargain.
Another Chris Bosh question here, and this is actually very interesting because it deals with some of the options. If Chris Bosh were to play next year and be clear to play by doctors, is the idea of restricted travel for Chris Bosh on the table? Here's what Pat had to say about that.
I think all those things will come in to play, and there will be a discussion. There are many players in different sports that do play with that condition, and they're on and off programs on blood thinners and stuff. But I think when it comes down to a final protocol, or if it gets to a formula in how this has to be done, then that's what we'll deal with.
Okay, next, a question was asked pretty much, how the hell did he get here at this point where they go from, you know, LeBron 2 years ago to now they lose Dwayne Wade, their franchise player. How did he get to this point where 13 years, a 13-year relationship down the drain now? How did he get here?
You know, you get to a point, I think, as a man in your life where your thinking and thought process change. And they change on the circumstances. They change on the present moment, they change on the future, they change on what's going on, and or you get locked into them. And so I keep talking about how he was thinking, I think, and how I was thinking at the time. And so But you are what your thoughts are, and if his thoughts are where he was at that point where money wasn't the issue, then it was something else. And then, you know, that is where we both failed then. You know, this was not about money. This was about something else. And I more than he, because, you know, he's the asset. He's the star. He's the face of the franchise. I should have tried to done everything that I could have verbally in trying to change his mindset to mine, or a big picture, or a better picture, or one that I thought would help him, and also would give him two things: would help him end his career, and also get him, I think, financially, the money that he needed and wanted.
All right, next, Pat Riley addresses signing Hassan Whiteside and how he felt and how comfortable he felt committing such a large contract, 4 years, $98 million, to a guy that's only been in the league a year and a half, only, you know, and pretty much is still what you call, I guess Iron Man would call a neophyte. Iron Man asked this question, actually, he did a great job forming this question. Basically, how if Pat Riley had at any point during day one of free agency, so even before that, any reservation about matching or maxing them out to the same offer that the Dallas Mavericks actually had on the table for Pat, Hassan Whiteside?
This summer, there was an explosion, an absolute explosion of dollars and the amount of money that came into the system because of the television contract and the cap going from $70 to $94 million. That's an added $24 million. I've never seen more teams with more maximum room than I've seen this year. So there were a lot of opportunities for players to really capitalize. I don't look at that with Hassan. What I look at with Hassan is that we were very fortunate to get him. But we did track him, and, you know, he was on our radar, and we ended up getting him here. And we saw enough in the last 2 years to say that this is a very unique talent, very unique player. And at the dollars that he's going to be getting over the 4 years, we felt it was worth the investment. You've all seen him play, and he can absolutely dominate a game. On the defensive end, blocking shots, rebounding, lobs, dunks, all those things. But I wouldn't judge him and warn him. Don't warn him, please. You know, you shouldn't do this just because, you know, the guy got a max contract. Don't warn him that you better play well, or we're going to tell everybody you're not deserving of the money. I mean, if you take a look at some of the contracts that went out the first 2 days, on December the 15th, Andy and I are going to be getting a lot of calls from teams about how to get rid of those deals. And so we believe he's an essential part of this team, anchors our defense, will improve offensively, and gain more confidence. So we agreed, you know, as an organization that he was a player that we're willing to make that investment in. I don't think he's a neophyte. Neophytes don't, you know, get 20 rebounds and 20 points and block 12 shots. He is a little bit young and raw to a leadership role and a responsible every single night role. You got to produce these numbers. That's what our obligation is as a franchise, as coaches, to make sure he's productive. You know, but the money doesn't have anything to do with it.
Next, Pat Riley gives his thoughts on the recent signings from last week of Luke Babbitt, Wayne Ellington, James Johnson, Willis Reed, and I believe I'm missing Dirk Williams. Yes, the news brings Miami Heat. His thoughts on the on those players and what it means for this team moving forward.
We some of the first conversations we had, you know, with Dirk Williams' agent, you know, James Johnson's, you know, agent. We always liked Luke, you know, Babbitt, you know, from years past. And we just didn't think he was in sort of maybe the right situation. But last year we felt that he played extremely well in New Orleans. And Willie Reed, we knew. We had him. We thought he had a good year last year with, you know, with Brooklyn. And so, you know, filling positions in right now with a lot of new players. And of course, with Wayne Ellington, having him come in as a player that's
we know personally that we know he can shoot the ball. And, you know, we felt very good about being able to go after these players and especially getting them on one-year contracts and at the same time, you know, having a very young athletic team and then still being in the game next summer. I've seen him have great games. I mean, truly great games. He started for Toronto a number of games before he rolled his ankle over. And then the young kid from UCLA came in and took a lot of his minutes. But I think with consistent minutes and, you know, with a specific role as a sort of a Swiss Army knife type of guy, he's 6'9" and guard guys. He can really defend. And I think if you're looking to beat anybody in the East, then you have to look at how you're going to be defending certain players that can make the difference. Derek, I mean, Williams, you know, from that standpoint, Derek Williams is an elite athlete above and beyond, you know, from an athletic standpoint. And we think we can raise his 30%, you know, three-point shooting to maybe 37 or 38. We feel like we can do that, that we can improve that. We can improve that with James. Luke already has that ability to make threes. Ellington has the ability to make threes. You know, Willie is just an athletic young guy inside who can score, and we need to have a backup center, and so it was a good opportunity for us. So all of them, we feel like they will fit in, especially the way that coach wants to play.
You know, lost in the smog of losing Dwayne Wade, of course, to Chicago, and you know, and not, you know, getting the Kevin Durant, at least getting Kevin Durant in the sweepstakes. The Heat also lost Lou Aldang and Joe Johnson, two of the forwards. And Pat Riley briefly explained the impact of losing Lou Aldang and Joe Johnson, and you know, just what they brought to the table.
Lou was in. He wanted to stay here. He understood our dilemma, the fact that he didn't have bird rights and he was just a two-year guy, you know, contributed a little bit to our overall thinking, but still there wasn't going to be enough for everybody. Now, you know, if a player decided to take some kind of an exception, then he gets his bird rights, and then next year you can be rewarded, and that's a whole nother kind of player in the thought process. But he was in until his agent called and said, you know, 72 is a lot. And I'm happy for him. He's 31. He's going to go out to, I think, a great franchise. They're going to use him, I think, in the capacity of being, you know, a player, a producer, and also an educator of the young guys. And, you know, I think Joe was a long shot with us, you know, always. When we got Joe, we were very fortunate to get him because he wanted to come to Miami and play here because he had an opportunity to be in the playoffs and play. And so he did have an opportunity to get to two seventh games, and he got a great offer too. And once he got the offer, then both of them were gone. So we lost, you know, Lou, and we lost, you know, Joe. But I think the person that is going to benefit the most from this, and it's time to step up, is Justice Winslow. You know, he's capable of starting in this league, and you know, that is right now who we have slotted in there, and that is who I feel very comfortable with.
Good to hear that Pat Riley is very excited about Justice Winslow and his future. Like, he once again acknowledging that while losing Lou Aldang was huge, you know, for this team, you know, he's Lou Aldang's great. He's a great professional and whatnot. But it's also worth noting that he's very excited about the youth movement, and especially Justice Winslow and his maturity and this is professionalism. And I think it's good to hear Riley be excited about that. Next, Riley is presented about a question about whether the Heat and where they stand in the rest of the Eastern Conference, and can it compete for an 8th spot or for a playoff spot in general?
When you look around the Eastern Conference and you take a look at, you know, who helped themselves and who didn't help themselves, you always, you know, Cleveland is obviously, you know, the class of the conference. You know, Horford, you know, going from, you know, from Atlanta, you know, to Boston, you know, it really, I think that helps them. They lose Sullinger. There's the possibility they might do something that can make them better. I don't know about, you know, with New York, with Derrick Rose, you know, going to New York, but with Joakim Noah, I think that's a great move for them to have those two players with Carmelo and with Porzingis. You know, I think, you know, that could be a team, you know, that could be different. I don't know how Atlanta's going to be with Howard now, you know, and he's a different kind of center than, you know, than Horford is. So I don't think there's any doubt that we can compete for a playoff spot. You know, I mean, you know, from that standpoint, it just you have to figure out and see who in the East, you know, really has what it takes to sort of be competitive. It takes 20 or 30 games, and you get a pretty good idea about where you are. But our plan is, yes, our plan is to always compete for a playoff spot. And I think we can do that. I don't think there's any doubt we can do it.
Yeah, I agree with Riley here. I think the Heat can still be competitive. I don't know if they're a playoff team next year. It depends on the East and how things look. Like I said, you know, Cleveland's still Cleveland. You still have the Toronto, still Toronto. You have Atlanta, still a decent team. You know, Boston. You know, I think Miami's ceiling ultimately is going to be at least 43, 44 wins. And that all depends on the factors of Dragic and Winslow and, you know, and Josh Richardson and especially Hassan Whiteside. Can the core make a difference now with Dwayne being gone and Luol being done, Dang being gone and whatnot? There's going to be a lot of things that has to happen for the Heat for that to become a reality. But I believe that this team can still be competitive. Now, whether it translates to wins, that remains to be seen. Next, Pat Riley is asked about whether now with all the events happening this summer, does he and Mickey Arison now feel reinvigorated about the future of the Miami Heat, and especially the next 12 months as we go into free agency next year? Does he feel motivated now that with the cap room and flexibility he has now going forward, that can they do this one more time, another championship run?
Well, that there's no guarantee that whatever money you can create next summer in the free agent market is going to bring in somebody. I think Kevin Durant is a pretty good example of a man who had an opportunity to make a choice, which is what you do in free agency, and he was true to what his criteria were. His main criteria was, if I go, I want to go to a team where I can win immediately. And he lived up to that. You know, and as hard as it was for him to move probably away from OKC, which is a formidable team, I read that Andre Iguodala said the other day that they were a championship team. And to make the change and go to Golden State, that's his choice. You know, that's what free agency is about. And that's what happened with Chris, and that's what happened with LeBron. You know, and that's what happened with Kevin. And I think you're going to probably see more and more of the superstars that might be with franchises for years, 4 or 5 years, and they're banging their head against the wall, and they get an opportunity to go somewhere where they think they can win. Now, I think you're going to see that happen more often. So as far as we're concerned, I'm always looking, you know, for that opportunity. I blow somebody's mic out here. And that's what we'll do again next year.
Next, Pat Riley tells a very fascinating story from 2010 when the big three, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade all decided to come to Miami, South Beach, to team up. And, you know, of course, you know how the story went after that. But he shared a funny story about the contracts and building the team and how originally the guys signed for 5 years, but then they wanted a 6 year, even though they had an opt after the fourth year and whatnot, and how much it did cost the Heat on the back end in terms of draft picks and whatnot, and how only last year the last draft pick for getting LeBron James in 2010 was actually was finally used up. It was in Philadelphia or Cleveland, where hell it was, but basically giving a little insight of how that worked out and how it actually hurt the team on the back end later on.
We're going to talk to you about your future and your draft picks and everything. I can tell you a funny story about, maybe I shouldn't, but I can tell you a funny story about 2010. When we took the three of them in, we had 49.5 million. So we had 16.5 for each guy, which was the max deal. So you got it. You got it all. You got it all. We got it all. We got it for you. And they said, well, who do we have left? I said, we got Mario as a starting point guard, and we got Joel as your center. That's it. We have five guys. Well, we'd like to get Mike Miller. How can we get Mike Miller? I said, I can't get you Mike Miller. We can't get him. I don't have the money. Otherwise, I can't give you Mike Miller. And so we traded Michael Beasley to be able to get the money, but they had to go down to 15. that was their choice, you know. And then they said, oh, we want UD. Okay, well, I can't get UD, even though I wanted to get UD. And so it was you know, that whole concept about, you know, bringing guys into room and on five-year deals. This is an interesting part of the July the 9th. They all agreed to come in on five-year deals, room only, so I didn't have to give up any assets. And then, you know, at the 11th hour, they all wanted the sixth year. And you know what that cost me and Andy. It cost us four picks. And I just said to him, I said, if you want the sixth year, because I know you're going to opt out after the fourth anyhow, but you're going to want the sixth year. I don't want any of you walking into my office and say, hey, can we get any young guys around here? Can we get some draft picks around here or whatever it is? Because they were gone. And I don't know why I told you that story, but anyways. I always get amused by it because, you know, I just watched our last draft pick that we gave for LeBron, like, get traded for, I think it went to Minnesota, ended up in Philly or somewhere, and he was playing in Cleveland. We still owed it. And I told Andy when he goes to the CBA meetings, make sure that if you ever do a sign and trade and give up a draft pick for a player, and that player leaves before the draft pick goes to that team, that it automatically is, like, given back to you.
All right, next, Pirelli addresses Eric Spoelstra's new contract extension, and at least some thoughts about Eric now, as he is now in a new role as being the developmental mentor for young players now going forward.
You know, from a contractual standpoint, you know, and I don't know if we've made an announcement yet on it now, but we're working towards an extension that I do believe will, you know, come to fruition, not only with him, but also with his assistant coaches. And obviously, we want to put the staff together, and I do believe that Danny and Juwan and Chris will, you know, all be part of the bench staff from that standpoint. So, and Eric has been through this before, Ira, because his first 2 years after I retired, he had contending teams, competitive teams, playoff teams, but obviously, they weren't championship teams, and I thought he did, you know, a hell of a job, you know, at that time, in starting his coaching career with teams that were competitive and also playoff teams. So, and then he had the 4 years where I think he really earned his stripes as a head coach with four finals finishes and two world championships. And in the last couple of years, there's been some you know, the rebuilding process, retooling to where we are today. He's got his work cut out for him. Welcome to being an NBA coach. It's not always going to be easy, and sometimes there's going to be other challenges. But I know one thing about him is that he is competitive. He's excited. He knows what the challenge is. He does love the guys that he has already developed. He's not a developmental coach. We have a developmental program in which he works very hard in improving from within. And so, you know, his philosophy as coach to me is bring him to me and I'll coach him. You know, that's it. That's the way it has to be right now. And he's very involved in the process all the time. Every single player that we talk about or sign, you know, he gives the nod, because I don't want to send him anybody that he doesn't want.
And there you have it. And some of the highlights, some of the main talking points, highlights of Pat Riley's press conference from this past Saturday. Like I said, it's very open, very, you know, melancholy. Like I said, I've never seen Pat Riley in this kind of state, in a sense. But once again, as he said, it's time to move on. You know, we have a roster of 17 guys to come to camp with this fall. And moving forward, we'll see what happens. Going forward, certainly a lot of things, questions that fans are going to have. You know, of course, if you have any questions to send me, of course, you can email me at ejchristian7@gmail.com. We may start doing mailbag podcasts here. So if you guys want to start sending any emails, you know, or any questions towards, you know, you have from me or some of the writers at the site, you can do so, and check out the site, of course, at hothoops.com. Remember, guys, we are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher Radio. We're going to be on Google Play as well, too, very shortly. Like I said, we thank you guys for once again subscribing to this podcast, and we're going to try to keep doing this throughout the summer if we can. Obviously, we're now at the very dead period of the NBA offseason now. Not a free agency's over or about to be over, and let's say we have the Olympics still this summer. But beyond that, it's going to be pretty much nothing going on heat-wise unless barring any big news until camp opens. So until then, we'll continue some content here. But until then, this is Ernest Christian signing off. And I'm on Twitter, of course, at EJChristian7. Feel free to tweet me. If you have any questions, feel free to tweet me and I'll get at you. God bless you guys. Take care.